So today we're going to talk about the relationship between financial accounting and HR practices. It's creating some perhaps unintended consequences. And here we are in the HR Hub podcast with me, Andrea Adams. Keep listening to learn about this topic and all kinds of things related to HR. You can also find me on YouTube. Today, my guest is Dr. Peter Capelli. Dr. Capelli is a professor at Wharton. He's the director for the Wharton Center for HR. He's a leading thinker in HR for sure, and author of many Harvard Business Review articles, which is how I discovered him. And I am so delighted to have him. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. So I'm going to dive in right away because we've got a lot to talk about. This is perhaps somewhat of a novel concept for those of us in HR, and we're going to talk about accounting to some degree. So can you summarize, you wrote a book about this. Can you summarize the point you're trying to make about how financial accounting practices impact HR decisions?
Maybe a slightly longer answer to that short question. I started writing this book to be a guide to how we actually manage people, because textbooks don't describe the reality very well. If you think about hiring, you know, you could look at a typical textbook, would talk about crafting the job description and then, you know, posting job applicants, getting applicants in, then screen, all that stuff. And the majority of people, at least in the U.S., who reported moving just a couple of years ago, according to the census, said they never even applied for a job. They just, somebody came in. You know, the reality is quite different. So when I would look through the different practices, you'd see the common theme was it kind of looked like a textbook example, kind of. You could see like the underlying bones of it, but it was as if you stripped it completely down and took everything off of it. So why would you do that? And then why are we doing things that just don't seem to make any economic or business sense? For example, on hiring, we track very carefully cost per hire. We don't track at all whether the people we hire are good or not. Why would you bother doing that? Well, practice by practice, I started to see this, and it all came down to this stripping the meat off the bones thing, which was all about trying to be cheap. Now, being cheap does not mean being efficient. I think that's a problem, is that, you know, maybe from too many economics classes, we seem to think that everything that is cheap is efficient, but it's not. You know, there are a lot of things which are the cheapest thing you could buy, which are not going to be efficient because they break all the time, right? And if you think about hiring, you could pay as little as possible for people, but then they quit all the time. And how does that possibly make sense? So we're doing that kind of thing with managing people. So to figure that out, I tried to think about, well, why are we doing this cheapness thing? It's upfront cheapness. It's not about efficiency. Why are we doing that? Then I started to dive into financial accounting. And financial accounting becomes a very big deal when investors become a big deal, which is after the 1980s, when companies started to give up on the idea that we have stakeholders and say we just got one stakeholder, and that is the shareholders, right? So what do shareholders look at? Financial accounting. That's all they can really see about a company. Companies don't want them to see anything else. They restrict the information quite, they hold it quite close.
Yes.
So you see financial accounting information. And how does financial accounting work? Well, it's based on very old approach, which was developed in a time when physical capital was the big deal. As a result, it doesn't handle human capital well at all. So under the accounting rules, the U.S. accounting rules, which are GAAP, those rules say that something can only be an asset if you own it. And you don't own people, so they can't be assets. And you can't invest in something unless it's an asset. So training can't be an investment, even though we talk about it as if it is. Training falls in financial accounting under administrative and associated expenses. So it's what you're spending for office coffee and stuff like that, right? It's lumped in under there, right? Also, if you're an investor, you can't see it. And if you could see it, you wouldn't probably like it because it's you can't invest in this at all, right? And to give another example of why it's quirky, we measure lots of aspects of financial performance on a per employee basis, not a per dollar spent on labor basis, but per employees. So if I get rid of my employees and I replace them with leased employees under contract to you or with contractors, my headcount falls, suddenly my performance per employee goes way up.
Right. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And then there are certain kinds of expenses. This big deal in the U.S., you're hearing maybe a little bit, unlimited vacation time. And
yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Heard about that.
The reason we do unlimited vacation time has got nothing to do with helping employees. It doesn't help employees. It's worse for them. And you'll see why in a minute. We do it because vacation time is an accrued liability for the employer. That is, you earn it and the employer owes it to you. Mm-hmm. So on your balance sheet, it sits as a liability. If you get rid of accrued vacation time, that liability disappears. Suddenly, you're more valuable. And what we give you instead is just a promise, which we could renege on, saying just take whatever you want. Nothing prevents your employer from punishing you for doing it. Nothing prevents your supervisor from just telling you, no, you can't. Nothing prevents them from making you feel guilty, which is what the evidence shows, you know, much time. But suddenly the company's more valuable for doing that. The same thing with pensions. Move away from pensions, largely are best explained by getting rid of the accrued liability for pensions and moving to defined contribution plans, which have no accrued liability. So there's lots of things which don't make sense in terms of business, like bringing in leased employees who are more expensive per hour or not training your employees. But if you think about it from financial accounting, makes perfect sense. Makes your company look more valuable to investors, even though it's quite likely going to perform worse. You know, if you think, for example, turnover costs, huge issue, we assume, unless you don't measure them. If you don't look at them, you never know, right? But investors never see your turnover costs. So they have no idea of knowing whether you're just churning through money as a result. So that's the idea, that a lot of the reasons we do things which are penny wise and pound foolish, and the title of my book was Our Least Important Asset, because a lot of employers always used to say,
oh, yes,
it's our most important asset. But in practice, it is the expense that employers hate the most, because it is what investors hate the most, employment costs.
So just to recap, we used to, like, I don't know, decades ago, the value of fixed assets, like a machine is going to build your car or do whatever it's going to do, was your biggest expense compared to employees. But clearly that's reversed in a knowledge economy. And so now it's about hiding. Is it hiding those costs? Is it?
Well, you just can't. There's no place to see them. But back to your physical capital thing, it's a great point to make too, because we had physical capital, you could depreciate it.
Right.
That meant we bought a big computer system and we have to pay it off this year. It's going to last 10 years. So as long as we pay it off on 10 years, it looks great for accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, we got this asset. If we hire you and we pay you a big signing bonus, let's say, we have to pay that off this year. Or if we send you out for training, we have to pay that all off this year.
Mm-hmm.
We can't depreciate it over time. So back to your point, as we've moved away from physical capital toward human capital, you think about tech firms.
Yeah.
Tech firms, it's all software and stuff. It's human assets. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't account for human assets in financial accounting. It will not allow you to do it. If you looked at a football team or a hockey team and players under contract, right? The accountants would say, no value there because you don't own those people. Now, if they were slaves, it's, we own them. That's great. They're assets. But if they're only under contract to us, no assets.
Mm-hmm. Did you come at this just because you started going down a rabbit hole and this is where you ended up? Or have you been seeing this problem for a while?
Well, I think we've all been seeing the problem. And many of us
didn't realize we were making the connections you were making.
Right. So same thing. I've been seeing the problem. If you think, for example, in an organization, how many times has this happened to you? You got a vacancy and you can't fill it because mm-hmm. they won't give you permission to fill it. And you're wondering why on earth that somebody thinks we're saving money by not filling this vacancy. The work isn't getting done. Why do we possibly think we're saving money? Well, the reason is because you can see those costs from the salary and it's falling. So it looks like we're saving money there. You can't see the lost business that we're losing, right? So you start to ask yourself, why are we doing that? Why are we pushing recruiting and administrative expenses onto expensive line managers, you know? Why are we looking at the costs of everything, but we're not trying to figure out the contribution from any of those things? Why are we doing that? Well, it's because of financial accounting. So I used to just say, as did my colleagues, just say, CFOs are the problem. They just don't understand. Mm. Well, it's not that they don't understand. They don't care. It's not their job. Their job, you know, make the company look good to investors. Right? They don't care about lost opportunities. They don't care about turnover costs because none of those things show up in financial accounting. So they don't care about.
You've listed some of the outcomes of this, the way we do financial accounting for our employees or around our employees. What are some of the other implications that maybe you haven't mentioned? Like, I'm just thinking about layoffs and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, think about layoffs. Suppose we were talking about physical capital rather than human capital.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine laying off your computer system? What does that mean? That means we just pick it up and set it on the curb. Let it go. We say that is insane. But if we take our employees who actually get more valuable over time, unlike physical capital, which erodes, right? Mm-hmm. We take those, we put them out on the curb. The investors say, very nice job. Mm-hmm. Yet because we don't see the benefits of skilled employees, you know, we just would never think that it matters at all whether you lay them off. This, by the way, for YouTube folks, is my cat who decided this was the time to pop up here and give her
my kitty.
She doesn't know much about accounting, but she knows what she likes, and what she likes is tuna. So
and pets, hopefully pets. I mean, why keep a cat around if it's not going to sit and warm your lap? Another implication I'm seeing of this, and you already mentioned, but I'd like you to talk about a little bit more, is we end up hiring more contractors or temporary workers. Can you comment on the trends in this area and how this might have advantages or disadvantages, both for the financial accounting, but maybe also outside of that?
Yeah, I think we, at least in the States, I don't know how it plays out in the rest of the world, but one of the, well, certainly in Europe, we know this is true. One of the big reasons for shifting away from employees was to get around employment laws.
And,
you know, if you have a contractor, you have very little responsibility to them. If you have an employee, they have all these legal obligations to them, common law obligations. You got taxes, payroll taxes and things. So, you know, if you just have contractors instead, you just zip around those things.
Yeah.
The big problem for organizations is that employees are incredibly useful because you can tell them what to do and how to do it, and you could change it tomorrow. With contractors, you're not supposed to do that. You have a contract with them. You're supposed to stick to the contract. And anytime you want to tell them what to do, you have to recontract with them. And if you ever dealt with a builder and you say, you know, we changed our mind about this, we want to do it differently, the contractor, if he's like ours, makes this
job. Oh, yeah, yeah, I was about to do that too. Whoa.
Going to cost you if you want to do that.
Expensive, yeah.
And then if you start to tell them, you know, I'd like you to paint this way, they'll say, go to the hell. I'm the contractor. I do this the way I want. You can't tell contractors how to perform their jobs. It violates the common law definition of what's an employee, right? So employees are quite useful. And so at least what we saw in the U.S. is lots of employers hire contractors and try to manage them as if they're employees.
Mm-hmm.
It's lots of employment laws, but it's hard to get caught. So, you know, there's some estimates that as many as a third of contractors are actually being treated as employees or misclassifying them, because this allows us to just get around the laws. So that's a big reason for the expansion. So why do it? Well, for financial accounting, it makes you look better. Right? That's why it happened. So that is one of the reasons why we have expanded the use of contractors and leased employees in particular.
Okay. So how is this affecting how we're doing HR? I mean, I can see how it's affecting how we are doing HR, but can you articulate that?
I think the most important thing for people in HR is first to tell them, you're not crazy. This really is happening. You know, you know, your company is leaving positions unfilled that are costing you money to do it. They're being penny wise and pound foolish. You know, we are underpaying people. It's causing them to quit. This is a pain for the business. It's making us less efficient. It's not your imagination. This is really happening. And the reason is the game they're playing is not economic efficiency, right? We assume it is because too many economics classes, I guess, yes, we just assume that, you know, being profitable means being efficient. It's not that simple. And anybody who thinks it is that simple, you know, just bring in more revenue and spend less money, you'll be more profitable. Just sit down for a couple of hours, because that's what it'll take, with an accountant who will explain to you how they calculate profitability. A dollar on the cost side is not a dollar unless it appears in this particular place. Where that dollar is matters a lot. That dollar spent on a piece of equipment, pretty valuable, it creates an asset. Dollar spent on an employee, really bad, because we don't like employment costs. We think they're fixed costs. And so where that dollar is matters a lot in terms of determining what is profitable, right? So this is another way of thinking. I mean, imagine we're playing, you know, a game of hockey for you folks, and you didn't tell anybody what the rules were, right? The goal, you know, the point is to put the puck in the other side's goal, you know, in their net. Okay. Well, just simple, just pick it up, run like hell toward the net, get three guys in front of you, hold their sticks out and whack people, and you'll go in the net. You can't do that. There's a bunch of rules. Oh, what are the rules? And then you see the rules are incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
And with financial accounting, it's the same thing. Profitability is incredibly complicated. It changes based sometimes on regulations the government passes, particular tax credits and things that are issued. Mm-hmm. And unless you sit down with your accountant, you won't know. I think the second thing for human resource people, though, is that the only path through this has got to be through the CEO. You're not going to persuade the CFO of this because it's not their job, because their job is to polish things up for financial accounting. But the CEO is supposed to be thinking, okay, I understand that demand, but I also have these demands from our operating people, and that is to have smart employees who know what they're doing, who don't quit all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we factor that in? Well, the HR people have to factor that in and go to the CEO and say, we did this turnover analysis, by the way, and we just want you to see, you know, what it costs us when a person quits, you know? And right now, HR has been shooting itself, in the U.S. anyway, in the foot, because there's this estimate going on of turnover costs, which is like $4,000 a year, which is only the administrative costs of bringing a new person on. It's not the productivity loss. It's not the loss of time when the position is vacant until you can with somebody else. It's not all disruption involved in doing, you know, bringing in a new person. Doesn't count any of that stuff, right? So as a result, if the CEO and the CFO think the cost of turnover is only $4,000 a year, so what if people quit? It's not a big deal. If you thought it was twice somebody's annual salary, you would be much more sympathetic to the idea we better do something about it.
And I'm shocked by that. I mean, because it's almost like HR cliche that turnover is expensive and way more expensive, but apparently that, while we might know that, it may not extend that far beyond us.
Well, you know, I have a colleague who was recently at a conference of HR people, and he asked them if they knew what their turnover costs were. And he said nobody raised their hand. Now, maybe they were just all afraid. He thought he was going to call on them or something. But it's a simple question, you know, do you know it or not? And nobody would say yes.
Okay. I wonder if that's more about, well, I don't know what it is precisely by position versus the general rule of thumb.
Right. But that's another HR problem. Is nobody knows anything precisely in business, right? Look at your marketing colleagues, right? They just make assertions. They know in general what it is. And the problem, if you say, you know, this, don't make perfect the enemy of the good. I don't know it perfectly, so I'm not even going to tell you my guess of this. Everybody else is guessing about everything. You know, we just put some parameters around it, like we're 90% confident it's this number. But in the absence of any number, you're going to lose.
Moving along. So this change that we're talking about in then the impact of this financial accounting method has been going on a long time, and the switch from having tangible assets to, you know, to more costs related to people has also been happening for a long time. So two questions related to that. Why is the issue coming to a head now? And even if changes, and if no changes are made, where do we go? Where do we end up?
Yeah. So why is it coming to a head now? You know, a few years ago, there was a lot of interest in alternative accounting measures that could approximate things like intellectual capital, but also things like goodwill, you know? You heard that sort of stuff.
Yep.
And there were companies that were playing around with that. But the problem with accounting is if it's a measure that only you are using, no one cares about, right? Because the whole idea of accounting is a system and measures that are comparable across organizations so you can compare. How are you doing compared to everybody else, right? So if other people aren't using it, it kind of went nowhere. You know, I think there's a couple of reasons why it's coming up now. One is the investors are on the same page. Believe it or not, they're on our page of saying we're irritated by the current practices because we can't figure out the value in these companies. They got no capital in physical capital. It's all people. And the accountants say there's no value there. They can't possibly be right. They have these enormous share prices. So how do we value these companies? So in the U.S., the investors have gotten, or groups of investors have gotten together to lobby the government. And they've lobbied the SEC to say, please change this. Require companies to report some information like their turnover and turnover costs. They already know that. It's not hard to produce that number. Report the ones that I care about, report the total spending on labor, not just your headcount of employees, but if you're using leased employees, how much of that are you doing? And what you're spending on training, you know? If we had those three things, it would change a lot of this behavior. And they're pushing the SEC to do something about it. The problem is the accounting community has no interest in doing this. They see the gap as the way that evangelical Christians see the Bible, you know? That I'm sorry, you just can't tamper with it. You can't modify it. This system has been terrific for years. We're just not going to play with it. So they have been resistant forever to any changes. I do care about the fact that we are making bad management decisions and they're ultimately inefficient, right, for the organizations. I care about that.
Yes.
One of the reasons why right now this is an issue, I think, is that this just seems to be getting worse. If you look at the discussion of management practices, you know, we see outcomes like employee stress and health getting worse and worse. We see real wages not going anywhere. The productivity is up. Stock market's booming. Wages are still pretty flat, right? Nothing. And we're supposed to have this incredibly tight labor market. So if we have this tight labor market and nothing is changing, you know, you would think in a tight labor market, supply and demand, you know, there's an imbalance. Demand is up, supply is pretty flat. Productivity growth is pretty flat too, which means there it is sort of a scramble for labor. Why is nothing adjusting? Why isn't that companies care more about, are willing to do things about these problems? Why aren't they willing to spend more time training people? Why aren't they willing to do more advancement of people internally? And yet we see almost none of it. I mean, almost no investment in employees. Training is way down. We don't see internal development and promotion. We see outside hiring all over. So the disconnect between the apparent need and our responses to it is so great that it pushes us for, at the very least, an understanding of why it's happening. And so that's why I'm here, is to explain why it's happening. But then we got to do something about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that is perfect segue into my next question. What should we do about this?
Well, so we talked about the policy issue, but, you know, you and I are going to rewrite the accounting standards. And we talked about inside companies, you know, we do need to present evidence on things like turnover costs.
Right.
I think at the moment, I mean, if it ever is going to happen, it has to happen now because we have tight labor markets. And even CFOs understand that, you know, if people are quitting all around you for more money someplace else and you're struggling to staff positions, maybe this is something we better actually try to do something about rather than just complain, which is largely what's happening, or blame the government or say it's kids today. That's my favorite, right? Every time there's a tight labor market, there's something about kids today. They just don't want to stay, none of which is true. At least here's some interesting data for a cocktail party talk in the U.S. If you look at the average 50-year-old in the U.S. and how many jobs have they had, 12 is the answer. Right? Most people guess like 3 or 4 or something like that, but 12. So there's a whole lot more hopping around that's been going on for older people too. Even if they were all hopping around just when they were young, then it's an attribute of being young. It's not an attribute of the current kids.
Right.
And the reason they're moving is the same reason everybody's moving, because you can and because your current employer won't give you a pay raise. And how could that possibly make sense, right? That we just let people walk and then we're going to have to hire their replacements and pay them 30% more. Why does that possibly make sense? Well, maybe in financial accounting it kind of does, but in economics, common sense makes no sense.
In your book, I imagine you talked about this a bit and provided some examples, because that's good writing, right? Stories. Do you have any examples of how this accounting practice has resulted in bad outcomes for a business?
I mean, if you were to point to a particular company or something, there's, I have a long description of Sears Roebuck, which had gone from, you know, all the big box stores are in trouble now. But they said Sears was going to be in trouble in the 1980s when the other competing big box stores moved in. Sears is a department store, Sears Roebuck. And they actually turned things around with employee management practices that really engage the employees. So smart human resource stuff, explaining to the companies, you know, how the business worked, what their role in it was, showing them the meaningfulness of their jobs and why it mattered what they were doing. A lot of empowerment stuff. And the company was doing pretty well. It was acquired by an investor who had never managed anything before and operated it as if it was an investment bank. But mainly they were trying to run it through financial accounting practices, you know, run and cut operating costs, keep wages down. They got rid of a lot of the empowerment stuff, carrots and sticks instead. Company's been in and out of bankruptcy since then. It's effectively out of business now. Now, all these department stores are in some trouble now, but they were in trouble before anybody else was in trouble, or 10 years or so ago. There is one other part of the story, though, which I'll just throw in here, and that is that along with financial accounting, we have a different generation of leaders who do think differently in business. And some of this is because in the 1980s, when the companies started to cut human resources, it's sort of understandable because they were just laying off managers. They said, why are we growing managers when we are cutting them all? So they just cut their management development programs. So after that, you know, you go into work for a company if you left college. You might get a little orientation, but that was kind of it. Before that, you often were in programs 2 years long that were teaching you management. So now we have a generation of people who started in business when that was all gone. And we increasingly have people from the investment industry running companies who never managed anything. And investment companies are kind of notorious for being poorly managed. And we have a model from Silicon Valley where the most successful companies had founders who had never managed anything. They were engineers if they had any discipline background, academic discipline at all. And their companies were hugely successful. And we made this post hoc, proctor hoc mistake. And that is thinking that everything they did must be smart because the companies made tons of money. Mm-hmm. And their view was you didn't need human resources. You could just run like a startup and just keep running like a startup forever. Now, they all ended up putting in place modern management systems, but they waited a very long time. Mm-hmm. And the model that they offered the rest of the world was you don't need management systems. You don't need management development. You don't need training. And so that played a big role in the way the investment community thought. You know, look at these companies. They're huge valuations. How do they manage? You know, no development internally, no systematic human resources. Seems to be fine. The problem is they quite likely succeeded despite that, not because of it.
Right. Because
they had these enormous advantages of being first movers in a market that just exploded with opportunities, right? So I think that's another problem. And this idea that CEOs from Lee Iacocca on and Chrysler in the 1970s should have their fingers in everything. They should be responsible for everything. So increasingly, I think the way I see companies run is they don't delegate anything, even like leadership development. The CEO wants to approve everything, or people think the CEO should approve everything. And the way this ends up operating is rather than presenting the CEO with ideas, they try to figure out what the CEO already wants.
Okay, so this is a bit of a pet question. I've been unscientifically observing a trend towards mass terminations to address issues. Okay, so two questions for you. First, can you validate my or contradict my observations? And do you think, and if I'm right anyway, that financial accounting is one of the drivers?
For sure, investors using financial accounting are the driver of all of this. I think this view we often hear that we don't think we have the right skills is quite likely something that psychologists call fundamental attribution error. And that means when you see things not going well, you assume it is because of the nature of the person rather than the circumstances around them, right? So if you see somebody zipping past you when traffic is stopped on the shoulder of the road, you just assume the person's a jerk rather than it could be a doctor going to an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So tend never to think, particularly executives, that maybe the poor performance is because of our strategy or because we're not executing it correctly or we haven't resourced it properly. We instead say, oh, the person running that project doesn't have the right skills, right? That is a fundamental attribution error. So, you know, it doesn't mean that there aren't people who have wrong skills and jobs,
mm-hmm.
but to immediately just go there without any systematic analysis is the fundamental attribution error. So that's, I think, what's going on with a lot of this we just have to clean house thing. But also, it's so bizarre to think that given how difficult it has been to hire people, that you're going to just dump your current workforce, particularly in tech where this topic comes up the most. We got the wrong skill. We need new skills for this. And, you know, somebody in HR would say, have you thought of retraining them? No, we say we're going to dump them all, which means we're going to have to fill all those replacements. We'll have to pay more for the people we're going to hire from the outside. We have to find them.
And
wrong in hiring, and even more so now because we got rid of recruiters. We're just letting line managers hire these people themselves. and hope they fit in and they work. The time it takes them to get up to speed, well, we just assume it won't be very much, you know. I mean, it's, if you walk through the steps, it's just bizarre. But back to financial accounting, the current round of layoffs seems to be just crazy, right? The economy in the U.S. anyway is doing really well. The stock market's booming. We have a very tight labor market. Particularly the tech companies really struggled after the pandemic to regain a workforce and to hang on to them. And now we're saying, oh, you better cut people. Why is that? It's entirely driven by the investor community saying, we think you're too fat. Now, the tech companies, some of them did overhire on purpose. Okay. They said, here is our opportunity during the pandemic with remote work to hire people we couldn't get before. We're going to hire them and we're going to hold them as an asset. If you're a financial analyst, you say hold as an asset. They're not assets. They're liabilities.
Right.
They're just operating costs. So what's so weird about this from an efficiency point of view is the CEOs and the leadership teams made a business decision about hiring people and holding them, and about how difficult it was to get them and to keep them. And now the investment community, which sees none of the insides of these companies, really, they just see financial accounting measures, and they're saying, nope, you're wrong. You have too many employees, cut them. And the companies, rather than pushing back, just said, sure. And then they just started cutting people. Now, immediately after they're cutting, they're announcing their hiring practice, their hiring plans. So we just dumped people. Now we're going to have to go back and replace them. Why does this make any sense? And if you think you're going to hire the hot skills, that's what everybody is trying to hire, right? So, oh, we want people who do generative AI. Well, so does everybody else. So we're going to dump our people, and we're just all going to chase those few people. We're going to hire them back and forth from each other. We're not going to try to create our own generative AI people, which is not that hard because the tech, I mean, yeah, obviously that's hard in the sense that these skills are unique and rare, but you're full of people in these companies who have very similar skills.
With aptitude.
And they already know your company. They're already your employees. How long would it take them to make them proficient in whatever you want? Not that long. I bet not as long as it's going to take you to fill these vacancies.
And get that person up to speed and being effective.
Yeah. So my colleague, Matthew Bidwell, I'll give him a plug on this, did this a while ago, but I'm sure it's still relevant. One of the best studies of this ever, he looked at people who were promoted from within to a company versus people who were hired from the outside into the same job, directors. And he found that the people who were hired from the outside, it took them 3 years to achieve the productivity of people who had been promoted from within. It took the people who were promoted from within 7 years to catch up to the pay of the people hired from the outside.
Yes,
so when you do this churning exercise, let's dump people and go hire from the outside, you're paying a productivity price and you're paying a wage price. And that goes on for years, right? So tell us why this is a smart thing to do.
Yeah. So you've been reflecting on this quite publicly, right, for a while, like in your book, called Our Least Important Asset, and in articles in the Harvard Business Review, I don't know if it's one or more, and in the Wall Street Journal and other places. Are you seeing any progress or appetite for change?
I guess what has surprised me, and I'm relieved, is I have not heard people saying, no, you're wrong. I think what you do here is a sort of, so what? Like, particularly from accountants.
Mm-hmm.
So what? These are the rules. This is the way we play.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But that's also why, you know, accounting is not the field where great artists come from. You know, it's not the home of creativity. So I guess that's been some relief. But, you know, I think the thing about this story is that it also explains why change is so difficult, right?
Yeah.
You have this system of accounting and this whole infrastructure around it, which has been built up over time to advocate for a very different approach one which just happens to be inefficient and leads to decisions which are particularly bad for employees, right? And so it's not the kind of thing that is easy to change. The good news is, if you look at the proposals in front of the SEC, Securities Exchange Commission, those would go a real long way toward changing things and could be done, you know, with the stroke of some pins. And that's really unusual, right? Unlike things like employee empowerment, which, you know, was a long slog company by company to try to persuade executives that, you know, the people underneath them know things that really are important. But this could be done really quite quickly. That's the good news.
Okay. So most of my audience, like maybe all of them, aren't going to have any influence in making the larger policy changes happen. But within their organizations, what advice would you give them? What can they do?
Yeah, so I would start measuring some of these things. What are our turnover costs? What are the cost differences between, here's a simple one, easy to do, between our what we pay our current employees and what we have to pay when we replace them, right? What happens when we leave vacancies open? You know, is it that just everybody chips in and works harder, which might burn people out, but if you're the investor, you don't care? Or does it mean the work just doesn't get done? Do things fall through the cracks? Now, during the pandemic, it was very clear things were falling through the cracks, right? And you could see it in places we all deal with, like restaurants, where they would just close because they didn't have the staff to stay open. Or they could only serve so many dinners a night, things like that. Are we seeing any examples of that? You know, somebody told me something, or told us, colleague, something just blew me away about this recruiting thing. So I wrote a paper a while ago about hiring. I wrote a book about this, actually, called Why Good People Can't Get Jobs, about why hiring is such a mess. You know, why don't we look at whether what we're doing predicts good hires? And they said, you know, the problem, the decisions are really being made by line managers who are often, you know, people with power. He said, if we showed them how bad they were, we would be in deep political trouble. If that's true, that is a terrible indictment, right? That, you know, I'm sure they all think that they're genius hirers. Most people think they're really good at hiring because they're more competent. They don't know, you know, they don't know how they're doing. If we showed them, they would be mad at us. And we would be in trouble. That's a terrible indictment if it's true.
All right, we should leave it there. Fascinating stuff. Slightly depressing, but fascinating. But I'm also glad that you're shedding light on it.
Well, at least I feel better knowing why things are happening rather than saying, God, the stupid CFOs, they're not stupid. It's not their job.
Yeah.
They have a lot of power because what they do really matters to the CEOs and their compensation stuff, right?
Well, thanks, Peter. That was eye-opening and so satisfying. It's so nice to know that we are going crazy. I'm thinking about my role in creating a conversation around this topic and generally the impact on business results when we're doing things in such a convoluted fashion. However, we have reached the end of this episode. I can't talk about it anymore. Thanks for listening out there. We'll catch you next time when I talk with another insightful guest.